This is The Hidden Basement, written by Sayal Kortz, read by Mistborn Hero, a Lockwood & Co. and The Sandman crossover, rated for general audiences, featuring the characters Anthony Lockwood, George Karim, Lucy Carlyle, Jessamy the Raven, Dream. It is tagged for Casefic, Ghosts, Haunted Houses, Minor Character Death, Off-Screen and Pre-Story. Summary. Dream has been freed, but something still remains in the basement. Years later, three psychic agents are called in to investigate the newly sold Burgess Estate. Chapter 1. The Burgess Estate. 1926. Bang! Blood splatters onto glass and slowly falls to the floor. Jessamy's body lies bloody on the hard stone floor. Everything feels hopeless as Roderick Burgess screams at his son and security guards to clean up the damn bird. Inside the glass prison, the being's gaze looks sadly as his loyal companion was taken away. Nobody notices the single feather that slipped between cracks in the stone tiles. A year later, in 1926, Roderick Burgess died, head knocked against the glass sphere as Alex looks on. After 50 years, the ghost of Roderick Burgess returns, just a couple of years after the problem started. Alex Burgess hired a questionable agency that knows to keep their mouth shut and got rid of the visitor within a day. His father's cane burned and melted into nothing. 30 years or so later, Dream escapes and punishes Alex Burgess into a life of eternal sleep, eternal dream, eternal nightmare. Alex's lover, Paul, sealed the door to the basement in hopes of helping him. It doesn't. Alex Burgess fell sick in 2010 and died within a year. His partner, Paul, followed soon after, and the estate has been abandoned ever since. See, it's interesting because Alex wasn't ghost-locked. He doesn't have murky white eyes, and his brain patterns indicate he's asleep, not awake. So, he's got the sleepy plague. What's so interesting about that? Lucy interjects. Their generation might not have lived through the sleepy plague, but the plague itself is common knowledge. It is the predecessor to the problem. The older generation often compare the plague's coma-like symptoms to the problem's ghost locks. No, that's the thing. The sleepy plague ended in 2010. Everyone who suffers the plague mysteriously wakes up from their sleep in 2010. Everyone except Alex. Some people theorized that Alex was ghost-touched by Roderick Burgess when he had already contacted the plague. But if that's true, then in the 30 years the plague and the problem coexisted, he's the only person who suffers from them both. Lockwood nods along as he listens to George's research while Lucy asks, "So, do you think our visitor is Alex Burgess or Roderick Burgess?" At Lucy's prompt, George seems to get more excited. "Neither," he grins. "It's been recorded that Alex paid a huge amount of money to get rid of Roderick's ghost as soon as it showed up. And Alex's death is after the death review law was signed in 2008. According to the review and future observations, Alex's chance of becoming a visitor are incredibly low. Hence, our new owner bought the estate Even though houses cannot be sold before an agency secured them from ghosts, and why he hired us, apparently he heard about our unorthodox methods from the paper, Lockwood adds. The three of them are currently on a train towards Winch Cross, where the Burgess estate lies. 3 days ago, they were approached by a desperate man with a lot of money to spare. Apparently, he had purchased an old abandoned mansion 4 months ago, and every night he's been hearing clinks and feeling cold spots in the mansion. The man hired multiple local agencies to deal with the issue. However, most dismiss it as a lonely man's rambling when they don't find either Roderick or Alex Burgess's ghosts. Hence why, when he heard about the bone glass case solved by an unorthodox agency with unorthodox research methods, he sent for them. From London all the way to Winch Cross, all expenses paid. It took 2 days for Lockwood & Co. to scour every piece of information on the Burgess estate's past history, and another day for George to read through it, summarizing his research in an expansive tale given on this train heading to Winch Cross. So, if it's not Roderick or Alex, is it one of their servants? Or Alex's lover, Paul? These speculations just seem to make George grin wider, his excitement skyrocketing. "Do you believe in supernatural creatures?" George asks, not physical human imprints like the visitors that we have, but higher power, inhuman, otherworldly beings. He leans forward, his tone full of intrigue. Lockwood and Lucy can't help but lean in, curious about what George has found. Roderick Burgess was said to have a demon in his basement. Thank you for taking this case. This damn clicking noise has been keeping me up for weeks now, and all these useless local agencies can't find a thing. Useless brats keep telling me it's all in my head. Bet they were messing around and being loud, that's why they can't hear the clicking. Or maybe they were all talentless scammers. But you can fix this, can't you? I'm paying a lot of money to get you here. You lot better not be a waste of expense. Well, I am leaving. You better succeed. The owner turns back around and slams the door behind him. No tour, no time wasted. What an amazing monologue, George sarcastically notes, lugging his various bags of equipment deeper into the estate. Ahead of him in the study, Lucy checks out some kind of shiny paperweight, while Lockwood looks around the rest of the estate, probably using his talent. Following Lucy's lead, George started examining the bookshelf filled with thousands of ancient books. No death glows, no traces, at least not in the study, the hallway and the drawing room, and the upstairs hallway. Lockwood reported as he joined the others in the study. Did either of you find anything, George? Luce? Lucy shook her head, wings flapping, a spark, maybe a match? With a sigh, Lockwood and Lucy turned towards George, prompting his report. Without looking up from the page he's reading, George adds his input. This book, there's grief and excitement tied to this book. Hurriedly, George shows the page he's on to his companions. This book is filled with cultist ideas. It even included supernatural summonings. I think we really should search for the demon in the basement. After some further discussion, Lockwood finally orders everyone to search for the basement. Knock on walls, knock on the floor, move the rugs and cupboards if you have to, or just stick your ears to it. If the ghost is truly in a dark basement, then it should be active and clicking even now. And thus they all separated to search for the hidden basement and the possible demon within. Lockwood is knocking on the floor. Lucy is checking under every rug. George walks out of the study and down the hallway, his fingers trailing across the dark walls behind him. Then he felt it. Isolation, loyalty, alertness. Ripping out the wallpaper and chipping the thin plaster behind it, George breathes deeply. Guys, I found it. End of chapter 1. The Hidden Basement, Chapter 2, The Pecking Bird. Slowly, all three teenagers descend into the basement, rapiers and torch in hand, salt bombs in their pockets, and a chain circle at the basement entrance. The clicking noise their client claimed to have heard becomes louder with every step. Turning around the last corner, they finally see what's hidden in the basement. Broken fishbowl? It is definitely glass, sphere-shaped and shattered at the front. It is held up by multiple steel beams in a criss-crossing pattern and surrounded by a dried moat on the stone floor. Lockwood digs into his coat pocket and pulls out his sunglasses. Sensing the other two's curious glances, he motions with his hand to examine the room. Stepping forward, their feet meet the hard stone sand. Looking down, they find the floor is covered in sand, with small dunes building up in some corners. The clicking noise gets louder, and finally, the three agents come face to face with their ghost. A majestic raven pecking at the remains of the glass sphere. Deathglow, on the floor, right beneath the ghost, Lockwood reported. Of the ghost, and who I assume is Burgess's sir, although he's really dim compared to the bird. Same for the two guards back near the foot of the stairway. Moving back towards the stairs, Lockwood cups his hand and gathers some sand, closely examining it. Lucy starts forward, closer and closer to the ghost and sphere, rapier held in one hand, ready for the bird to strike her. But the bird doesn't move. It keeps pecking, even when Lucy was only a step away from it. Taking the ghost as non-hostile, Lucy sheaths her rapier and walks around the sphere. Closing her eyes and taking a deep breath, Lucy touches the sphere. It's the pecking noise, and then... Bang! She flinches, hitching breath, distant screaming, and without realizing, tears fall from her eyes. Exploring the room, George is astonished. Look at this place. Torches on the wall, guards by the entrance, runes on the floor. Roderick Burgess really was keeping a demon in his basement. The bird took a moment to squawk in protest at George. Guess the bird doesn't like you calling it a demon, George, Lockwood notes. He lets the sand fall through his fingers and stands next to George, examining the glass sphere. It may not be a demon, but it's definitely otherworldly. There's a weird glow inside the bowl and sand. Hearing that, George hurriedly moves to take a sample of the sand, already thinking of several experiments for when they return to London. After several minutes of the agents each exploring the basement, Lockwood finally calls for their attention. Enough dilly-dallying. I know the ghost isn't hostile, so there is no urgency, but it is getting late, so we should find a source and quickly rest for the night, he orders. Remembering their purpose here, George and Lucy collect themselves. Right, I think I know the source, George explains, moving towards the dried moat. It must have gotten carried by the water since it's a bit away from where the body was, but there's a feather. Whoa. George's explanation was cut off by the sudden flight and the squawk of the bird. Surprised, all three teenagers drew their rapiers, ready to attack. But the ghost doesn't attack. It stays there, wings flared, as if not wanting to harm them, only warning them not to take the feather. They were at a standstill. Lockwood, being Lockwood, tried rushing the bird, sneaking on the bird and even waving his rapier at the bird. But the bird is fast and alert and it rushes back. It notices and it flies at Lockwood until he backs off. George is obviously watching how the ghost reacts in glee. It threatens, but it is careful to keep away from the silver rapier. It also does a noticeable effort to keep Lockwood away from its fatal touch. The ghost is aware of its existence as a ghost and of the trio's intention. George isn't knowledgeable in bird behavior, but even he can note that this bird is intelligent, way beyond what a bird should be. Lucy has spent the first few of Lockwood's efforts keeping watch, making sure that harm won't befall him. But seeing how both Lockwood and the bird look more like playing around with each other rather than fighting for the feather, Lucy lets them be. She takes a closer look at the glass sphere. She keeps gravitating back towards it. Looking back at Lockwood and the bird again, Lucy finds that Lockwood has turned on his charm and is now trying to bargain with the bird. It is amusing to find the bird seems to nod along to Lockwood's words. Who would have thought that in this case they would find Lockwood sitting crisscrossed in front of a ghostly bird? Not Lucy, that's for sure. Glancing to the side to see George's grinning face, she's sure he's also as amused as her, although maybe for different reasons. Looking down, she notices a slight stain right between her boots. It is very faint, clearly has been washed and is almost black with age. She is standing on the bird's death site, brushing her hand against the glass beside her. She can hear the bang again. How cruel, the bird was shot right against this glass prison. Whoever or whatever was inside there is free now, but something still remains. Lucy looks away from the stained floor and comes face to face with the glass. Cracked glass. The loyal bird remains. George wasn't paying much attention to what Lucy was doing, even when she suddenly walked past him and up the stairs. They've been in this basement for quite some time, each exploring every nook and cranny in their own way. Lucy deciding to take a breather upstairs is not at all alarming. What's alarming is when she comes back 5 minutes later with the crowbars from their kit, dropping two on the floor and rushing towards the glass sphere, raising the crowbar over her head, and she swings hard at the glass. The sound of shattering glass echoes in the room as Lockwood hurried to Lucy's side, asking what is going on. With the crowbar, Lucy gestures at the bird Lockwood just left behind. Its happy squawks fill the room. It was trying to free whoever was in the glass sphere. Even though it got itself shut, even in death, it is still trying to break the glass. Raising her crowbar once again, she swings. So why not give it a little help? All three teenagers are panting by the end. The glass sphere has been reduced to nothing but crunches under their shoes. The bird that has been flying in circles over their heads in what seems like excitement while they smash the glass sphere has finally come down, down towards its single remaining feather. And it stood there, calm, no more aggression visible on its body. Calmly, Lockwood walks forward with a silver net in hand. This time, as he reaches for the feather, the bird stands still and stays still, watching them as the silver net closes and it disappears. All three of them stood in silence as they processed what had happened during this case. That ghost was responding to us. It has clear goals. It was communicating. Well, communicating as well as a bird could. Well, did we just find a type 3 bird ghost? Lockwood's parents were researchers, which means that they have a lot of source-containing storage available in the basement, which is how they come to this. A big box for a single feather, not enough for a bird to fly around in, but big enough for a ghost bird to manifest and trot around inside. Glass around the surface so that the raven, George did some quick research, can give them a welcoming squawk each time one of the trio enters the library where it resides. Only an unorthodox Lockwood & Co. would ever manage to have a ghost as a house pet. That night, the members of Lockwood & Co. sleep peacefully on their beds, a rare occurrence for a group of teenagers facing death on a daily basis, traces of sand under pillows. Below them, in the library, a lone figure dressed in black walks in, the raven giving an excited squawk from inside the box, happy to see the figure walking free. "I am glad you are at peace now," it says to the bird. "Shall I call my sister to guide you to the sunless lands?" The bird replies, and the figure nods. After exchanging a few more remarks, the figure quietly leaves. None of the residents would know he was ever there, if not for a note left on a magnificent silver birdcage the box has magically turned into. Her name is Jessamy. The end. This has been recorded for Boys Teams 2024 for the challenge Crossovers. Thank you to Sailcourts for giving me permission to record this, and thank you for listening. I hope you enjoy, and please remember to drink some water today.